Hello and welcome to this episode 62 of Rashcast with me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello there.
First and foremost, come on the Reds. I mean, I know this isn't a sporting podcast, but I've just watched Liverpool get to the Europa League final and I'm still a little bit giddy. I just want to get out of my system. I know you have no interest in football, so, you know, I won't even talk about FIFA or Pro Evo. That's it.
Well,
I just needed to get it out there.
Is the Reds the name for Liverpool in Pro Evo?
No, it's
Merseyside Reds.
Classic. Although I've become accustomed now to just having all the kits because of the PlayStation 4 modding system where, you know, people can save kits and then you can just kind of you download them offline.
That's handy.
Online. Yeah, it's a bit of a fiddle because it's not like with some games where there's just a menu in the game. You've got to download them online to a memory stick, then put the memory stick into the PlayStation 4 and download the kits. Usually, I would never bother with anything
I mean,
like that.
That's a backdoor way to PC gaming. I hope you're aware of that.
It is.
You have to use a PC.
Yeah, and I'm not happy about it at all.
Yeah.
And let's make this clear. I would 100% not be doing this for any other game than Pro Evo. But the dream of playing with like fully licensed Premier League teams has been one I've held for a long time. We had one season when Liverpool... Because basically, like each season, there'll be one Premier League team. I think a few years, there were two Premier League teams when they'd have like the full kit, and it's always Man United. And there was one year when it was Liverpool.
I remember there was one when it was Chelsea, but yeah, I can't really. That was a long time ago.
Like Spurs a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But it was like around 2008 when Liverpool were killing it in the Champions League and Torres was on the front cover.
Right, okay.
But yeah, that was a long ass time ago. So yeah, I did go through the effort of downloading all the kits and going through the editing process. Very tough. But the thing is, again, Pro Evo, I said I wasn't going to talk about Pro Evo, here we go. it's one of those weird games where part of the fun is the editing. It's like one of the first things I'll do.
Changing the name
Pro Evo
stuff.
Game. I'll just spend an afternoon just with a cup of tea or a beer, and I'll just go through the names of the clubs and the teams and stuff. And now it's just a little bit more involved, but it's just one of those odd games where I accept it. But yeah, no more football chat, all done there.
Okay.
Instead of the usual format, we're actually going to jump straight to topic of the week this week, because so often we leave it to the end of the episode, or we just miss
it out
completely. But basically, it's on the back of... I must have written 1,000 reviews for... Well, 1,000's a bit of an exaggeration, but hundreds. Like, that's no exaggeration. I've written hundreds of reviews for Brash Games, what was formerly Ace Games, over the past, 9 years. That's how long I've been writing for the website.
Wow.
And in those 9 years, I've never given a game a 10 out of 10. I'm especially stingy, and I feel like a 10 out of 10 should always be reserved for those truly special games. I do feel like, 10 out of 10 is kind of dished out on a relatively regular basis nowadays. And, I've mentioned before how I don't understand how IGN can ever give a game 10 out of 10 because they're working on a 100-point system.
Yeah.
They're giving a game 100 out of 100. I'm like, really? You're going to give, Uncharted 3 100 out of 100?
I think they're... Yeah.
Again, that's my personal opinion. I don't agree with that. And as I said, I've never given a 10 out of 10, let alone 100 out of 100.
Yeah.
But
it depends on the outlets. Some are stingier than others.
Yeah. I guess I fall somewhere between, like, it's two of the magazines which still survive the...
I know where you're going with this one.
Well, one is Edge, who I sometimes feel are a little bit too harsh even for their own game.
I never take Edge reviews seriously.
Really?
Because, like, I love their articles. Like, the reason I liked Edge is because they went behind the scenes. Like, they don't just review the games.
Mm-hmm.
They do pieces on people and on how games are developed. And, like,
and
they always
reviews,
have really insightful editorials.
Yeah. But even their reviews, don't they have, like, a review and then there's a follow-up section as well? Like, a discussion?
Often,
well?
Yeah. Which is really good. It's normally an interview with a senior developer of some description. The only way of getting a good score from Edge magazine seems to be being from software. They have their noses so firmly planted up from software's butt.
It's the magazine I've always purchased if I go for one, and as I said, you don't always agree with any publication, whether it be online or paper based, but that's kind of my middle ground, somewhere between Edge and game. And I don't like the fact that video games, like in particular, the video game industry tends to dish out rather favourable scores. More so with the concept that, 7 seems to be average.
Yeah.
I'm still of that mindset where 5 should be average. Although I've got to be honest, even with my own review, sometimes I find myself reviewing comparatively, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah,
like, I feel like I know what, basically, because, you know, our reviews go up on Metacritic, and, you know, these reviews are, but especially if you're reviewing kind of smaller games.
Yeah.
And it's like, in my head, I'm like, okay, this game's pretty average, and in my head, an average is 5, but I know what that does to a game. And I know for the vast majority of people, 7 is very much seen as an average game. And I find that sometimes I do bring up scores accordingly, in line with, you know, other public, you know, and that's not going against
finding that what baseline.
I believe, you know, you read my review and it's completely honest, but I feel like I have actually fallen in line with industry standards, so I don't want to complain about it too
much.
So much
of the pitfalls you have with rating games with a numerical system is that, like, people come to your site for numbers. Because people like to see it in that cold...
I do as well.
Cold, yeah. Well, I mean, I think we've all been guilty of doing it.
Yeah.
But people... The internet is a place for people to feel vindicated about their emotions. And if they...
Or their purchases.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a quote from a Penny Arcade comic book that I love, which is, I'm going online to find people who agree with me. And like, so many people will... You know, I guess this could just be a rant against the internet, but just the way that people react to something that really doesn't affect their life that much. They're being given consumer advice and they're being treated like their favourite game is being treated unfairly.
Yeah. It's advice, and people, again, I mean, you know, we don't have to tell these people. People know, they just choose to ignore it.
Yeah.
It's an opinion. But, you know, you see online all the time. I mean, I always think the greatest example is when a review comes out for a game which hasn't been released yet, and a review gets torn to pieces online by people who have never played the game.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Because they saw a trailer.
And it's just, well, they've just got it in their head. Either they've pre-ordered it, or, you know, sometimes people, they just want the game to be good. And I get it. It was like, you know, and it's not just video games. It happened with movies. It was like when the reviews came out for Batman versus Superman. There were so many people who got so angry at the bad reviews.
I think the Venn diagram of people who get angry at movie reviews and people who get angry at game reviews, it's pretty much a circle.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I agree. And the thing is, you always get these people online, and we've always said it is the vocal minority, you know, and it's best just to ignore it, basically. The thing is, like anything else, it's tricky with the internet because there is so much nonsense, but there's no point in getting angry at other people's idiocy, because it's easy, you can see it a mile away, and it's best just to ignore
it. It's an important thing to learn before you step out onto the internet.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, we've already gone off topic on our topic of the week. I mean, essentially, the whole reason for this was that, as I said, in those years, I've never given a 10 out of 10, but there are games that were released in the period that I've been writing for Brash Games, that I would have given a 10 out of 10 to if I had reviewed them.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, I think it's worth having a look back at the games which we think or agree are the unequivocal 10 out of 10s. So I guess just to get the ball rolling, I was just going to bring up the games where, again, if I'd reviewed that game of Brash Games, I think I would have given it a 10 out of 10. It's a pretty short list.
Okay. But I already think I know what number one will be.
Okay, well, you probably do know. Well, it could be one of two. Mario Galaxy 2,
there we go.
Without question.
There it is.
Without question. That's a 10 out of 10. And I would argue, before Mario Galaxy 2 came out... Without Mario Galaxy 2 in my head, I think if I'd reviewed Mario Galaxy when Mario Galaxy came out, I think I would have given that a 10 out of 10 as well.
Okay.
I honestly think... Mario Galaxy was a perfect Mario game until I played Mario Galaxy 2.
Yeah, until you realised.
And, you know, you just thought, oh, this is brilliant, Mario Galaxy 2, you're just going to get more Mario Galaxy. Yeah, you are, but it's even better. Mario Galaxy 2 took a 10 out of 10 game and made it even better. It was
up to 11.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to give a game 11, I mean, I actually said that famous to Paul. I was having a discussion with him, and I said, Mario Galaxy 2 is a game I could literally play forever. I could see me just, I can always go back to that game. I did everything in that game, every single thing I could, and I still, every so often, I'm like, I could start it again. But every time I think about starting it again, because I still own it, obviously, I'm just like, no, because there's going to be that HD collection. Every time I think about playing it again, I'm like, no, don't. Because wait for that inevitable HD collection, and that's when I'll start it all over again.
Like,
and I
like evangelist
will.
Christians waiting for the rapture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just waiting for Jesus. Yeah. And
you refuse to enjoy your life because you know that something better is coming. It's just around the corner.
I don't want to say that Mario Galaxy 2 is
better than Jesus
of modern video games, but I'm not saying it's not the Jesus of modern video games. Right, that's all I'm going to say.
Gotcha.
But the other ones I have on my list, this one, I'm not sure if I would have given it a 10 out of 10 at the time, but in retrospect, I think I would have. Mm-hmm. And that's, we spoke about it last week, is Red Dead Redemption.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Again, I think when I was playing it, would I have given it a 9? I think I would have. It would have been a very serious conversation. It's not a bolted on 10 in the same way that Mario Galaxy is. Mm-hmm. But I think looking back now, with the game and the DLC on top, Undead Nightmare, I think I look back at that and I'm like, oh, that's...
Well, if
that's
you view that as a package, that's...
That's a 10 out of 10 game. That's a 10 out of 10 game. The only other ones, again, I'm not sure, I think this is maybe just before I started writing for them, but it's one of my favourite games of all time, and Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube.
Oh, yeah. Specifically the GameCube version.
Yeah, well, that's where it came out, and, you know, obviously there's been a HD version since, mm-hmm. but, you know, it was released, what, 7-8 years later. The PlayStation 2 version wasn't as good.
Wasn't the Wii version pretty good, though?
The Wii version was really good, but again, I'd already played, like, you know, the impact was the GameCube version. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, at the time, that was in the conversation, and it remains in the conversation for my favourite game of all time. Like, Resident Evil 4 is a top 5 video game for me. The only question is, what position it's in? And I would put Mario Galaxy 2 in that, like, I don't want to say for definite, but Mario Galaxy 2 would be very near the top 5. Definitely in the top 10, possibly in the top 5, but Resident Evil 4 is a definite top 5 game, and a game I would give a 10 out of 10 to, especially at the time. I wouldn't have thought twice about giving that game a 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. It really is a genuine masterpiece, that game, and I think everyone knows that, you know. You can go back and play that game now, and it holds up beautifully. But what's the other one? Just before I give you your shot here, again, this is on the borderline, but and a bit of a surprise choice. I'm just thinking in terms of time. I played this just before I started reviewing for Brash Games, but Outrun 2.
Really?
Oh my god, it is. I think I've gone back to that game possibly more than any other game.
That always struck me as like a budget title. Like,
when that was released on the original Xbox. Because it was initially an Xbox exclusive, Outrun 2.
Okay.
I remember the day I got it. I had the day off work for one reason or another, and I went down to Choices Video Store and I rented out Outrun 2 and I just played it all day. And what struck me was just the visuals, the fact that it was so, you know how much I love Sega. It was such a Sega
blue skies.
And it was just the perfect evolution of the Outrun series. It was just the perfect example of taking a classic 80s arcade game and making it modern, and that game still holds up. And it's just the perfect example of arcade racing, absolutely perfect. And especially at the time, because I think it's still fantastic now. And obviously, you can go on to Xbox Live and play Outrun Online, and you totally should Outrun 2 Online. But it was very much at the time. To me, it felt so cutting edge, and it was released around the similar time to like Burnout 3 Takedown.
Right.
And obviously, that got all the plaudits. But I remember those two, like, I just felt spoiled for choice at the time. I was like, people were making the racing games I wanted to play back in like the mid 2000s.
Tell you what, Burnout. Speaking of Burnout 3 Takedown, that would probably be a 10 for me.
It would be very close. It would be very close. Mm. But I absolutely agree. Again, you're talking in that conversation. If I was reviewing it, like I think back then, it would have been a big decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Do I give this a 9 or a 10? The thing is, though, maybe because there haven't been the sequels, but I haven't gone back to Burnout 3, and I'm not sure if visually it'd hold up in the same way.
I don't think it would.
I think the beauty of Outrun 2 is that it has that very solid arcade look, which often ages so well.
Yeah,
and I know,
yeah.
Obviously, you know, if you play it on Xbox 360, it has been, you know, given the HD upgrade, but it's basically still the same game. And even if you go back and play the original Xbox version, which is backwards compatible with the 360, it still looks fantastic.
On the other hand, I think that's that art style that made me assume that it was a budget game.
Yeah, well, a budget game. That makes me sick to my stomach. Absolutely. It is anything but a budget game. But again, you know, a lot of these games got released as arcade titles on the 360.
Mm-hmm.
you know, Sega Rally. In fairness, it was a paid back Sega Rally, but there was Sega Rally Online, which was, again, like you say, a budget title in so much that it was released on arcade for, what, like £8, £12, something like that.
Yeah.
Same with Daytona, which I loved as well on the 360. I love that update. But yeah, Outrun 2 really has a special place in my heart. And I played it as recently as like a month ago. But the last one I have on my list, I mean, well, I have two, but I feel like Grand Theft Auto 5 should be in this conversation.
Really?
But
okay.
Well, it is an exceptional game, but it's not my kind of game. Like, don't get me wrong, it's too good. Like, I finished it. It was a great game. I just wanted to mention it because I think a lot of people would give it a 10 out of 10, and I would totally get that. Mm-hmm. Like, if you came in and made an argument, like, if you came in and said, I think Fallout 3 is a 10 out of 10 game, I would say, okay, I can kind of see where you come from, but I think you can go fuck yourself. It's not a 10 out of 10 game. Whereas Grand Theft Auto 5, if you came in and said, I love this game, I thought it was a 10 out of 10, I wouldn't have much of an argument. Because every argument I have is just like, oh, well, it doesn't really work for me, maybe tonally.
Yeah.
But as a game world, mechanically, freedom, you know, online, all that jazz, it's an absolute
I would concede that the game mechanics that run the city in Grand Theft Auto, yeah, they're incredible. They're second to none. And the city itself is, that's what makes it so fun. To just be a citizen of that city, just wandering around.
Totally.
On the other hand, I think the story was pretty weak, and I think very few people play Grand Theft Auto for the story; they play it for the characters.
See, that maybe that's why I actually the character and the story. That was it was definitely my favorite Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto 5.
Really? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Vice City is still mine.
It was a very good game, and obviously had an amazing setting and soundtrack and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for one reason or another, the story and the characters never really grabbed me in Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Whereas this, it all, you know, it finally kind of felt like a, well, with 4, because I know a lot of people don't like 4. I actually quite enjoyed 4 as well. And again, it was because I got more into the story, and because it wasn't basically this constant homage to. Mm-hmm. You know, pre-existing films. It felt like Grand Theft Auto 5, while still obviously having that movie vibe and those references. They felt like they were going in their own direction.
I remember Nico, his cousin Roman, who always wants to go bowling.
Oh, he loves bowling.
And a police officer played by Samuel L. Jackson who's trying to exploit you. Pretty much all I can remember about the story from Grand Theft Auto 4.
Wait, wasn't Samuel L. Jackson from San Andreas?
Was it? Well, there you go.
I think it was.
Yeah, there
I
you
thought
go.
It was.
That's how forgettable the stories were for both of those
Grand
games.
I agree. I wouldn't give Grand Theft Auto 5, if I'd reviewed it, I would give it a 9. But again, I just wanted to bring it up because I would totally get it if people said a 10. But the last of them, and again, The Last of Us. Absolutely accidental. But it's one of those games that I would go back and forth on. I mean, for most of the game, when I started it, I was like, I found it a bit awkward. Then I got into it, and I was like, this is an absolute masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
And it was building up, and I absolutely adored it. And like, I think if you'd asked me, say, what is it, like 10 hours long? If you'd asked me 8 hours in, is this a 10 out of 10 game? I would have said yes.
Right.
But then there was that escalation at the end when, you suddenly have to shoot all the people. And you're like, oh, no, you're doing this. You're doing, you know, the escalation moment when it's like, forget the story, we're just going to throw loads of bad guys at you.
Yeah.
That kind of took me out of the game and I got a bit annoyed with it, and that's when it got marked back down. But then there's the actual finale.
And the catharsis.
And, you know, that great moment at the end of the game, and I was suddenly back up towards 10 again. So that was the last one where I think I would have, I'm not saying I definitely would have given it a 10, but I would have thought about it.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I mean, at that point, the PlayStation was kind of ending, like nearing the end of its life cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
It showed you just how much Naughty Dog had progressed since they started doing action adventure games, well, the Uncharted series.
Yeah, yeah.
Like masterful use of stealth, great mechanics,
amazing storytelling.
Yeah, the storytelling was great. It looked gorgeous. Like that opening scene, you know, when the outbreak starts and you're playing as Joel's daughter is absolutely heartbreaking in just the right way to kind of set the tone for that game. And there's so many memorable, like I played it
everyone
on PlayStation when it first came out. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I remember the kind of compound that Ellie finds herself in trying to escape from, and just how horrible and creepy that was. And
that's one of those, like, I kind of have four moments in my head when I think of that game. And, like, don't get me wrong, there were tons of moments, but the four that really stand out for me are the opening, which you already mentioned,
yeah,
the giraffe bit. It's that moment of quiet. Yeah. The bit with Ellie in the compound towards the end of the game when it was really, as I said, it was ramping up towards the end of the game, but I was still on board with it being a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Then there was that shitty moment. But then, again, the finale, which, again, really kind of pulls you back in and, set, you know, remind, because you kind of step away from the game with that in your head.
Yeah.
And, like, that was something pretty special, that game.
Yeah, pretty totally. Pretty special indeed. Totally.
But do you have any, as I said, recent games that you would add to the, that you would have given a 10 out of 10 to?
Like, I find myself in two minds about it because, like, I've heard, like, the guys at IGN discussing what makes a game a 10 out of 10 and mm-hmm. the fact that the word perfect is actually quite harmful in this context mm-hmm. because no game can ever possibly be perfect.
Yeah, well, that's what I say about IGN. Like, it's weird how IGN have that conversation where if they're admitting a game's not perfect, why give it 100 out of 100? Basically, what I always think of, if I'm giving a game out of 10 out of 10, I'm rounding up. I'm essentially saying this is closer to a 10 than yeah. it is to a 9, if you see what I mean. Whereas if you're reviewing it out of 100, you're saying this is closer to 100 than it is to 99 or 98 or 97. I know it's a bit trivial, but...
To take off that token point, though... For a feeling, like I know, like you're reviewing it, and it's down to you. And if in your gut it is not a 10, it's not a 10, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, there are games where it might not be everything that you like that you think a game could be, but it does everything it should.
Yeah, I don't think it, I think in that situation, don't give it a 10. If you literally. If there is any negative, like you said, I'm not saying perfect, but like again, take Resident Evil 4 for instance. Uh-huh. I look back, like at the time when I finished that game, I look back and I'm like, I wouldn't change a thing. Mm. I would not change a thing about that game at the time. It's same with like Ocarina of Time when it came out. It was so forward thinking,
yeah.
And I was just like, well, that was as close to perfect as currently I could imagine. Of course, games have surpassed it since,
yeah.
But as I said, same with Resident Evil 4, games have surpassed.
Well, you have to take them at their time. Like,
but yeah, of course,
there are
of
too
course.
Many people who are like, "Oh no, I still go back and play Space Invaders." It's like, yeah, fine, but why? There's so much better stuff out there.
In fairness, I do agree with that. And actually, that brings to mind one other relatively recent game which I would have in that kind of category, mm-hmm. which I possibly would have given a 10 to. And that's Pac-Man Championship Edition.
I remember you having a soft spot for that game.
That game is fucking unbelievable. Again, a perfect example of taking a retro game, keeping the core of it, you know, the essence of the game.
But updating it
to a mod, you know, and adding that little bit of longevity and that little bit of, you know, that unique flavour to the concept without losing what it is.
Okay.
And there is something to be said for the perfect simplicity of something. I know what you mean, though. Like Space Invaders... The great thing is about it, it's what, like 34 years old? You can pick it up, and if you put it in front of someone, they're going to have a go of it. It still has that immediate appeal. But, you know, what are you going to do? Spend like 2-3 hours on it? No fucking
way. Well, the thing I just wanted to mention about taking off a token point because you don't have that feeling, but you can't quantify it. Like, put it this way. Take one of the games that you really enjoyed, The Last of Us, and then take away its multiplayer. Does that affect your score?
No.
You see, because what that says is then that the multiplayer has no value at all.
Well, it didn't to me.
Yeah.
The multiplayer was
really good, apparently.
Yeah, it was really good. It just wasn't for me. But whether, I mean, you know, if it was exceptional, the multiplayer, maybe it would have convinced me that it was, you know, a downright 10 out of 10. There was no conversation.
Yeah.
But just it being there... Like, it didn't bother me. It was like, I had a quick go, oh, it's fine. But when I think of The Last of Us, I don't think of the multiplayer. It doesn't even come into the conversation.
Yeah.
I just think of the single-player experience, and that's it.
But that's what I mean about taking off token points. Like, if you feel like a game is... Yeah, if you feel like a game is 10 out of 10, but something's missing, but you can't quantify what it is, if it is something as basic... Well, I say as basic as multiplayer, that's not... Because it takes a lot of development time to make a game multiplayer. But, like, I can kind of see why people will give a 10 even though it's not a perfect game, and I think that's something that,
yeah, but that's different because varies. You've got, say with Last of Us, mm-hmm. and say the multiplayer was shit, you've still got a perfect game, but you've got an imperfect multiplayer add-on. But then, because I think,
but then is the game everything it can be? Is the game 100% perfect?
Well, again, I guess it goes down to expectations. Yeah. I think with The Last of Us, you could still give it a 10 out of 10, and you could just completely discard the multiplayer. However, I think a unique situation would be, say, the new Call of Duty comes out, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And for one reason or another, the campaign is a goddamn masterpiece. An absolute masterpiece. It's a 10 out of 10 campaign.
Sorry, I shouldn't have laughed at that. Yeah,
I know, it seems ridiculous. But the campaign was a 10 out of 10, but they botched the multiplayer. That would be a weird one because you couldn't give it 10 out of 10 because people go into Call of Duty with the expectation that the multiplayer is going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
And for so many people, the multiplayer is
Call
the
of Duty.
Game.
Yeah.
Whereas me, I wouldn't really notice if they botched how they would have to botch the multiplayer so badly for me to notice because I'm not a I play it occasionally, but mm-hmm. I'm very much casual. Whereas I'm much more likely to, I have more interest in the campaign than the multiplayer. But for a lot of people, even if the campaign was a masterpiece, if they botched the multiplayer, there's no way they'd give it a 10.
No.
So again, it comes down to expectations, and it's tricky, and it becomes more and more tricky in this world where, like you say, with Call of Duty, you could almost separate it into two games.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, as I said, it's a personal opinion thing. I think that 10s should be reserved for those really special games. And as I said, when I look at those games, I think to myself, it's like, oh, well, is there anything I would have changed about them? Anything? Is there anything imperfect? And the answer is no. And that's why The Last of Us is maybe why I wouldn't give it a 10, because it was a 10 experience all the way through, but then I just remember that bit at the end where I'm just like, oh, this is bumming me out a bit. And if it's bumming me out a bit, it's not a 10 out of 10 game.
Yeah.
It's a nearly 10 out of 10 game. Like, if I was marking out of 100, I'd give it 9.5, 9.6, but I would feel, and again, maybe it's a personal thing,
yeah.
I just feel like 10 should be reserved for those incredibly rare games where you're talking about, as close to a perfect experience as you can get. And there are only a few. I was having a think about the other games which would come into that 10 out of 10 category, going even more retro.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of them are Nintendo games. I think if you go back, Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario 3, Super Mario World, I think all three of those are 10 out of 10.
I'm sensing a theme here.
I mean, would you agree, though?
Personally, no, but I...
What, with any of them?
I just don't have that Nintendo... I came to Nintendo late. By the time I played Mario, I had played other games that I thought were better.
I mean, I remember getting Mario 3, my friend getting Mario 3 around the launch.
Yeah.
And putting that in for the first time and realizing that map was only World 1 and just fucking losing our minds. And I mean, I know I was a kid back then, but I think, you look back and that game has aged ungoddamn believably. I mean, what would you change about Mario 3 other than saying, well, maybe I'd improve the graphics, but it might lose the charm. You're talking about a game which was released in, 1989, 1990, something like that.
Yeah.
And same with Super Mario World. These games hold up amazingly well. Link to the Past would be in that conversation. Obviously, Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Halo, I would have given a 10 to at the time.
Yeah, that's one we're definitely going to differ on.
Oh, Halo at the time was so good. I mean, especially when it first came out, it was just so much better than every other game of its ilk. Certainly on consoles, anyway.
Halo never really landed with me until 3, and even then, it was the multiplayer that sold that game.
Really?
Halo could have literally no story, and it wouldn't really affect my enjoyment of the game.
I was always into the story, but I mean... I remember it as a seminal moment in my game. I remember the first time I saw Halo being played, and it was in a Debenhams, and they used to have a game in Debenhams as a concession.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember those.
And they had Destiny, Halo playing in one a booth kind of thing, with the console.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the water kind of flowing up on the beach and everything, and I was like, this looks like the goddamn future, and I played it and absolutely adored it. A similar game, and again, to come back to, there's a few more Nintendo games here. Mario 64, 10 out of 10. Yeah. Tetris, 10 out of 10. That is a perfect example of a puzzle game. Like, you know, I don't think a game has to be a big sprawling world to be a 10 out of 10. If you do what you're trying to do perfectly, then why not be a 10 out of 10 game? And Tetris is arguably the absolutely perfect puzzle game.
Would you say Bejeweled is a 10 out of 10?
No. Okay. I don't think it's as good. I like Bejeweled, but do I think I'll be playing that in like 15 years? Mm-hmm. No way. I think if you put an original Game Boy in anyone's hand and you give them Tetris, they're playing the shit out of that. Don't get me wrong, Bejeweled's really good. Bejeweled's probably like a 9 out of 10 game maybe. But I just think still, you know, got all these years after its original release, I don't think anything has surpassed Tetris.
I just worry that as we go backwards, we start to put on the rose-tinted glasses. I mean,
I don't think
that's something that happens. You know, it's not a bad thing. It's game reviewing. It's subjective. You try to be objective, but you can't 100%.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to try and see it again, as you mentioned, as how it was at the time. But Tetris was an absolute phenomenon at the time, and I still think the actual core concept of Tetris stands up brilliantly today. Well, like, if Tetris was released today, you wouldn't necessarily say, "Oh, well, that's 10 out of 10," because there's all these other puzzle games, but in terms of what it was and, you know, how it's held up, I would put Tetris in that 10 out of 10 category. And last few, sorry, I'm just getting carried away here. Punch-Out, I would have. The original NES Punch-Out, I think, it's essentially a collection of boss battles.
It's also a puzzle game.
Everyone is perfect. Yeah, puzzle. It's a puzzle boss battle. Yeah. It's one of my favourite games of all time.
I guess a bit like Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah, yeah, but it's better than Shadow of the Colossus. Like, Shadow of the Colossus is an amazing game, but that's got loads of technical faults. Like, it's not a perfect game by any stretch. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing game, but it's not a perfect game. Metroid Prime, I would potentially have as a 10 out of 10. Again, a lot of these games are actually games I think Edge gave 10 out of 10s to. I'm pretty sure Edge gave... Because, again, they're very stingy with their 10 out of 10s. But I do recall them giving 10 out of 10 for the original Halo and Metroid Prime, which is interesting. And the last one is Half-Life 2. Remains an exceptional game,
and at the
time was, you know, in terms of first person shooters having an effect, like, you know, there was Halo, there was GoldenEye, and there was Half-Life 2, and they're the three. And I know a lot of people talk about Call of Duty 4, but even
that's
that, I don't
probably don't, my one that's really my, that's my 10 out of 10 first person shooter.
So that's a 9 out of 10 for me. Yeah. It's still great, but I don't think that had the same impact as Halo or Half-Life 2.
Multiplayer, amazing campaign with some genuinely stunning moments that video games had never addressed before.
Yeah, well, that actually, and I'm not sure if you intend it, but that is one of the finest segues you'll hear on the entire internet this week, because obviously Infinite Warfare has been announced, and probably the biggest news to come out of the Infinite War announcement is the fact that Call of Duty 4 will be released alongside it as part of the Legacy Edition.
Yeah, you have to buy the main game to get the game that you actually want.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. They had to do that, didn't they? Because, I mean, as you mentioned there, like, it's one of your favourite games of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think a lot of people agree. And I tell you what would be interesting. Imagine if they released both at the same time. What do you reckon would sell better?
That would be an interesting experiment.
Wouldn't it? And they're never going to do that. That's why you can... It's not that they don't... I know a lot of people...
They just don't want to face facts.
Yeah, well, don't get me wrong. Of course they want to release it online, but they know they'll cannibalise their own sales. Yeah. And there's no point. And, you know, if there's any way to take Call of Duty and make sure those numbers start going up again, this is how you do it.
Release the one that everyone wants.
Yeah, alongside a new one set in space. Like, this Call of Duty is going to sell like fucking gangbusters.
Yeah.
Like, Legacy Edition. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Legacy Edition outsells the Standard Edition.
Yeah, possibly. It's not... Like, I just don't have the amount of time to play multiplayer games like that, but...
I'm just looking forward to playing the single-player campaign again.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's one of the ones that stand out for me. There's, like... The last Call of Duty really... it was okay, but I kind of like finally lost interest in the not the concept, the structure.
Right, okay,
it was like,
gotcha.
There was stuff, like, don't get me wrong, there was some interesting stuff in Black Ops 3. I don't think people have mentioned enough just how fucking bonkers the end of Black Ops 3 really is. I'm not sure if you've played it.
I have, but I remember, all I really remember about it was running along the top of a nuclear submarine.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. It had some cool moments, but the ending was fucking weird as shit. But that's besides the point. The fact of the matter is, no matter how weird it was, no matter how many cool set pieces, I was like, I've done all this before. It just felt like the same game.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is like, and what I've heard, you know, rumors obviously, but mm-hmm. Infinite Warfare, that yeah. it's going to have a more open structure, that there are going to be side missions, that there's going to be maybe even an upgrade system, and I think this is what the game needs. In like,
it's either that, or they tighten it up and they just make it a fucking MOBA.
That's the
two directions video games yeah, are going in, really absolutely. Big and really tight.
Yeah. I mean, I hope they just go for a more open approach with a little bit more variety, because again, you know, these explosions and the set pieces, they're all amazing, but like mm-hmm. a Michael Bay movie where they go, it was like, you know, like the last Transformers movie, it's like, if you do actually sit down and just take a scene, you're like, well, this is an amazingly shot scene. He's not the best director in terms of storytelling, but
yeah.
from a technical and action standpoint, there are very few directors who can actually match him.
Yeah.
But there's so much of it that you just become numb to it after a while. And that's what happened to me with Call of Duty. I'm just like, I just don't care anymore. None of this has an effect.
Yeah.
And I just think it needs to like have those slower moments.
After Modern Warfare 2, that was it for me. I was like, right, okay, cool. So what's next?
Yeah.
Black Ops. All right, so it's kind of like futuristic weapons. Well, that's kind of cool, but I don't know. The story's not there for me. So, like, mm-hmm. once Modern Warfare 2 came out, I was like, okay, I think I'm done with Call of Duty for now.
Really? Well, I've played the campaign for every Call of Duty game, and it's weird because, I mean, when you look back at Call of Duty 4, what's the bit everybody remembers? It's one of the slowest bits in the game. It's when the game actually takes the foot off the pedal.
That level alone is 5 of the 10 out of 10 for me.
And it's, it is a spectacular stage. And that's
so good.
It is a fantastic stage. And again, I think Call of Duty needs more of that. It's just constantly got his foot to the ground. Like, everyone who's playing it has got fucking ADD.
Yeah.
Or ADHD. Attention deficit. No, it's ADD. Whatever the fuck it is. You know what it is.
Yeah.
And I just think, just take your foot off, have slower moments, allow us to explore the game world, because they create these gorgeous-looking game worlds. I mean, from a technical perspective, Call of Duty is spectacular.
Yeah,
it's spectacular. They look
there's
great.
There's a reason it's the big dog. There is a reason for it.
Well,
and it's not just money.
No, it's not just money. The gameplay, the gunplay in particular, is absolutely second to none. It's second to none.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think it's a shame that you have these gorgeously created stages, but you're thrown through them at a million miles per hour. You just don't get a moment to, you know, smell the roses, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I hope we get that in the new game. And I am interested in the concept of it going to space and then really doing something a bit different. And of course, I am interested in going back to playing Call of Duty 4. And I don't, you know, whether I'll play the multiplayer of either of these games, that remains to be seen. I'm much more interested in the single player campaign. If anything, the only multiplayer I'm looking forward to is Titanfall 2, which obviously we're a bit away from. But,
That's funny, because like, the reason that Call of Duty games kind of went downhill after Modern Warfare 2 is because they all defected to Respawn, to form Respawn.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was the whole legal hoo-ha, and it just kind of got a bit horrible. That was around when Battlefield actually became my multiplayer game of choice.
What's that, sorry?
Battlefield 3.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you have gold, don't you?
Pardon?
You have I'm not sure if it's on gold or EA Access, but all the multiplayer maps and all the DLC supposedly for Hardline and Battlefield 4 are all free.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, I don't have 4. 3 was the sweet spot. I did have 4 for a little while.
I really liked 4.
And it was good, but I didn't know anyone who was playing it. And that's half of enjoying Battlefront is,
yeah,
like, if you're the tank driver, you need someone to watch your back. You need someone who's actually awake instead
yeah,
of a guy who's just going to spawn, jump out, and run away.
Yeah,
because that's not helping anyone,
doesn't it?
It does.
It's not the best way to play it, but it's such a good game that I do kind of just force my way through it. And even though
Bad Company 2, 10 out of 10? Close,
no,
maybe?
No. No. It'd be more 8 or 9 for me.
Okay.
I wouldn't give any Battlefield game a 10. Battlefield 4, again, that's another interesting example
mm-hmm.
of the multiplayer being like a 9. Easily,
and the game,
but then the single player game being like a 5 or a 6, and it's like, would you mark it down because the single? And I would, because I have an expectation for that game. Like, I wanted to play the single player campaign, mm-hmm. and it looked amazing, but it was shit. Mm-hmm. So I would say, that would affect my review, whereas like I would have maybe given Battlefield 4 an 8 because the single player campaign was shit. But again, that's a personal opinion, whereas I would understand someone who's just like, I don't care about the single player, I just want the multiplayer. The multiplayer is great, I'm giving it a 9.
I'm just gonna put it out there so we can move on from the subject, because I haven't really given any of my 10 out of 10s, but I think...
Yeah, sorry.
In the same way...
I'm shit at this podcasting thing.
It's okay. No, you're too good at it. That's the problem. The same way you feel about Mario Galaxy, where you were like, oh, I played the first one, and the first one was perfect, but the second one was better than perfect.
Was even more perfect, yeah.
The Portal games. I think that Portal show. 1 was incredible. Like, I mean, considering it was a demo from a bunch of nerds who were messing around with the Source engine, that just happened to impress the guys at Valve, and then just the astronomical jump in terms of just everything, you know, the voice acting, level design continued to develop despite the fact that level design in the original Portal is second to none.
Spectacular, well, second only to the sequel.
Yeah, I suppose.
But no, it's exactly what you said. It was like when Portal came out, it was one of, sorry, I should have brought that. I just totally forgot about that. That would be in my 10 out of 10 conversation.
Mm-hmm.
When the original Portal was released on the orange box, I played it and I didn't know anything about it. And I was like, holy shit, this is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And obviously that was what happened for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone mentioned at the time, like, oh, we're going to do a sequel and we're going to add a story and stuff, I'd be like, go fuck yourself. I was like, just leave it. It was a perfect little something. Don't touch it.
Yeah.
You know, it was lightning in a bottle. It's not going to happen again. And then, of course, they release 2 and you're like, oh, well, I was talking bullshit. This is amazing.
Yeah.
They just absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
Like you said, you could argue the case for Portal being a 10 out of 10. But then you're like, well, Portal 2 is a 10 out of 10 plus, mm-hmm. then, I suppose. So, yeah, it's always tricky. I guess it's one of those ones where Portal was a 10 out of 10 at the time. And now, if you look back on it, it's like, well, I couldn't give Portal a 10 out of 10 because it's not as good as Portal 2. But,
yeah,
fantastic games. But, and good shout, because I can't believe I overlooked that. Absolutely shocking. Speaking of... I guess I can say speaking of Titanfall, we were speaking about it relatively mm-hmm. recently.
Yeah.
news this week, news I'm very interested in, is that Respawn are confirmed as making a third-person Star Wars action game.
I did not expect that.
No, not at all.
Well, I thought that Visceral were working on one, because they had Amy Hennig and Jade Raymond as well. From like, she was the one who made Assassin's Creed really famous after... Patrice Desilée left,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
so like they've got like an all-star team at Visceral making a third-person Star Wars action game,
and now they got Respawn.
What could Respawn be doing?
Well, I mean, whatever the hell they want. The fact of the matter is, obviously, this is all going through Disney, and this actually leads into my next point.
Mm-hmm.
Again, being a rumor, but they're obviously taking the video game thing very seriously.
It's like they're making up for lost time after LucasArts dropped the ball.
Yeah, LucasArts dropped the ball, and you look at how Marvel has been treated in video games. Like, obviously, there have been high points, like everyone remembers Spider-Man 2, but there's been a whole host of shit Spider-Man games. There was a host of very average, like there was a Captain America game, a Thor game, when, you know, it was under Sega for a little while. There were a couple of pretty shit Iron Man games. And I think Disney are obviously taking the time and thinking, all right, if we're going to do this with video games, you know, obviously they'll have their mobile games.
Yeah.
If we're going to do the big experiences, I think they're going to do just that. They're going to be big AAA experiences with talented developers, and Respawn making a Star Wars game fits, you know, alongside Visceral and obviously DICE.
What that tells me is that they're making a multiplayer game.
I thought I read somewhere that they were making a kind of more adventure game, like a third-person adventure game. But again, I think it's still rumors at the moment. Obviously, it's being confirmed Respawn are making the game, but as to what they're making, time will tell. But it kind of fits in with this other rumor, which is one of the most exciting rumors of recent time, is the idea that Sucker Punch, the developers most famous for making the Infamous series,
mm-hmm.
a series which I absolutely adore, which I don't feel has got the attention it deserves. In even, Second Son, which I absolutely loved, even though Dalton was a bit of a tool, I still thought it was a fantastic game.
Mm-hmm.
But the rumour has it that they're making a PlayStation 4 exclusive Spider-Man. Now, that, and again, it all fits together because Activision don't have the rights anymore,
Did they not? Right, okay.
No, they don't have the rights anymore. And of course, while, you know, Spider-Man showing up in the Marvel Universe now, he's still a Sony character.
Mm-hmm.
They still have the rights. They're essentially loaning him out to Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, you know, why couldn't Sony make a PlayStation 4 exclusive Spider-Man game? And if you're going to have any company making a PlayStation 4 exclusive Spider-Man game, you get fucking Sucker Punch to it.
Because
essentially, that's what they've been doing for the past 10 years.
God, imagine what Spider-Man 2, the video game, could look like nowadays. Like, think of all the features. Being able to go inside the buildings, having the bad guys actually look like the bad guys. We haven't had a good Spider-Man game really for a generation.
Oh, absolutely. Like, there have been... The thing is, even the worst games have tended to be at least sparingly or momentarily fun, because just swinging around the city... His web swinging
is fun, yeah.
It's fun, yeah. And you think... You put that in a city with some triple-A polish, like you said, and, you know, you can go into the buildings, the combat's polished, and you just think, you know, you put Sucker Punch on this, you know, how good-looking are their games? They look absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of this being, an exclusive for the console, because you think, oh, if this is an exclusive, it's going to get that much more polish again, where they'd really push it as part of their lineup. So whether this is true, I don't know. I've just heard it as a rumor, but it's one of the most exciting rumors I've heard in years. It's like, it's a dream project I didn't know I was dreaming about until I heard about it. Because it was just not something I ever considered.
It's amazing that Spider-Man's kind of fallen off so much, because...
They keep making shit games. Activision just rush these games out. They don't put the development time into it. They just think, oh, well, the Spider-Man name will sell, which it does to an extent.
Yeah.
And nobody's, you know... And I think it took Rocksteady and Batman, and hopefully, you know, say Sucker Punch are doing this, I hope it's the same approach. I don't want to see Sucker Punch do Spider-Man Homecoming, the video game. I want to see Sucker Punch do Spider-Man, the video game.
Yeah.
You know, based on the comics. Or their own take. You know, because let's be honest, you know, Rocksteady, it's not even based on the comics, it's their interpretation of Batman. And that's what I would love to see. I'd love to see Sucker Punch's interpretation of Spider-Man. And why not? You know, keep it separate. You've got the video game universe, you've got the movie universe, you've got the comic book universe.
That Rogues Gallery alone means that the variety of boss fights that you could have,
it'd be amazing. Is,
like, I think only Batman has a better Rogues Gallery than Spider-Man.
I
didn't realize how kind of uncool Spider-Man is. I have friends who read comic books that hate Spider-Man, and that was a genuine surprise to me. We've spoken a couple of episodes ago about how Spider-Man for me is like he's in that top tier pantheon of everyone knows who Spider-Man is.
Oh, absolutely. Spider-Man is just off. I would still put him just behind Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
In terms of just global... But even then, you're talking very close. Like, you put Batman at the top of the list, and I think just behind him is Superman and Spider-Man, in what order is based on your opinion.
Yeah.
But even with Iron Man and all that jazz, I still think of
Iron Man
Spider-Man.
Only really became popular after the movie.
Because the movies, yeah. But let's be honest, those movies have made him, you know...
Triple A now.
He's right up there. But I would still say, even to a global audience, like, Spider-Man is the face of Marvel. Like, when people think of Marvel, they think of Spider-Man in the same way that when they think of DC, they think of Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
You know, I would
agree.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Iron Man for years obviously was nowhere near that. I'd say Iron Man is that second tier, like, just behind now.
Mm-hmm.
But I would still say Spider-Man's there. And again, I just think... You talk about a marriage of perfect developer to perfect concept. You know, Sucker Punch Spider-Man is absolutely ideal. But speaking of, see, I'm doing it again. We're working pretty well with these.
If only we didn't keep mentioning them.
I know.
You can't help. Pat yourself on the back after we finish recording.
Yeah, and then I briefly forgot how to speak, so that didn't help either. But we both went to see Captain America: Civil War last week.
We did on the same day.
What did you think of it anyway?
I really enjoyed it. Like, it was a kind of double whammy of pleasant surprises for me. Well, not necessarily surprises. One pleasant surprise and one just pleasant experience. So we've spoken about it on the podcast before, but I've moved out of the city.
Into the sticks.
Yeah, and my closest cinema is in Bathgate, which is just a small town in West Lothian outside of Edinburgh. And It's a converted...
In case you didn't realise, Ross is Scottish.
Yeah. It's a converted church. And I was like, oh, right, okay. So it's basically, they had enough space for a big room with a screen at one end and some couches in it. Mm-hmm. But it's actually, like, the cinema screen size wouldn't look out of place in, like, a Cineworld.
Really?
Like, it's surprisingly big. The couches are all really comfy. And, like, I've never really been to a fancy, expensive cinema before where, mm-hmm. you know, you can sit and drink beer and and watch black and white French movies.
You need to get to the Dominion, dude. One of the great cinemas.
But I tell you what, this place was really good. Like,
awesome.
The sound quality was great. Mm-hmm. That you actually see the guy who operates the projector.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Like, and the guys who seat you. And because it's a Marvel film, the guy came in and was like... just so you know, guys, at the end of the film, there's a post-credit sequence, and you know, me and Cara turn to each other and like, Marvel noobs, like they've never seen a Marvel movie before. People did get up and go as well, and the guy's like, "Where are you going? There's more."
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. You know, let's be honest, if you're watching Captain America: Civil War, it's like what, the 22nd fucking Marvel film. Every single one has the after-credit sting, mm-hmm. and a lot of people got up and left. I was like, "Really? You're fucking leaving now? You're not gonna
fair
watch?"
Enough.
But yeah, each their own, I suppose. But
it was something that permeates Marvel movies so much that
I
stayed right until the end of the credits for Star Wars Episode 7 because I was like, well, they're both Disney films. Maybe that they're not doing it. They're not doing it for there.
They were never going to do it for that. They were obviously going to keep it traditional.
I guess spoilers for Star Wars Episode 7. Like, maybe you just see like Han's hand, like just grab the edge of the rail and then cut
to
black.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Just him putting himself up. Oh, my God. Well,
it's just really dark. There's not really much of a fall.
The planet blew up. I don't know what rail? Would you be hanging onto a rail in space?
Yeah, just floating.
Yeah, just floating through space.
Like Darth Maul.
Yeah, he fell like...
He just Darth Mauls it. Darth Maul gets cut in half and survives.
Yeah, but he fell down a hole in a oxygen-filled space station which didn't explode?
Well, that's true.
Is that correct?
Well, wait. It wasn't a space station, it was Naboo.
Of course it was on Naboo, because I was thinking, no, it was Anakin was up on the space station, and that did very much blow up.
It does make me wonder what that whole place was. It's like, what's Naboo? Like, it looks vaguely industrial.
Yeah, yeah.
What's so what does Naboo create other than walkways and laser doors...
Yeah.
Because I don't see any reason for this massive pit and series of laser doors.
Yeah, the laser doors, what are they for? And then the giant hole? A giant hole, like, which permeates the whole Star Wars saga. There's always a giant hole in the building.
I mean, it's like, no wonder the Trade Federation had a stranglehold on them. Mm-hmm. Their only exports were walkways.
Absolutely. And it's just like, have a fucking railing. Like, Jesus Christ, this is so amateur hour. It's like you are asking...
It was a long, long time ago, to be fair.
Yeah, but they're asking for lawsuits. I mean, this is an advanced society. You're telling me there aren't lawyers for you knocking around? Like, really? Another fucking Death Star? They haven't put up any railings. I'm going to be right on that.
You know what we've done? We've actually just made a commentary piece for Phantom Menace that's almost as boring as Phantom Menace was.
Yeah, almost. Have you fallen off a walkway? Have you fallen down a pit which didn't need to be there? If so, please call us immediately for a no claim, no fee charge, or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah, it's just the Emperor manning the phone going, good, good.
Good, good.
We should have your check in the mail.
I have loads of problems with Episode 7, but come on, as soon as you see that scene, and you're like, there's no rail here, and there can only be no rail for one reason, and that's so someone can fall the fuck off.
I just imagine at the edge,
even a token rail, they could fall over the top. You know,
just at the edge of the scene, there's the like overseer. He's just a stormtrooper with a high vis helmet on top of his stormtrooper helmet.
Yeah,
and like a high vis vest, and he's like, guys, you can't be out there without hard hats and a vest. Come on.
And what's a hard hat going to do? You are literally over what looks like an endless pit. I mean, it's a bottomless pit.
It's those kinds of questions that get someone's force choked, Leo.
I actually love that idea that you have to wear hard hats on top of your stormtrooper helmet when you're walking across a walkway with no barriers on the sides and a, 7,000 foot drop.
You just come out the other side. You just come out of the anus of Starkiller Base.
Starkiller Base, such a ridiculous name. I still haven't bought that on Blu-ray because I'm worried I'm going to watch that again and I'm going to start cutting into pieces. But that's for another website. No, another podcast. I do apologize. So Civil War, though. I mean, how did it rank?
I totally derailed us there.
Yeah, we do it all the time.
Really good. Like a fantastic ensemble piece.
Indeed, quite the ensemble.
The actual story with the. I guess we can't really go into spoilers because it's not going to be that long.
No, we're going to spoilers now.
The actual story with Captain America, it's kind of following on from Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And that element of it is good, but it seems kind of by the numbers.
I guess they had limited time, though, I suppose, considering all those characters.
The stunts are all incredible.
No, amazing. The fight scenes are fantastic.
Yeah. I didn't find that it was quite as. It seemed darker. It didn't seem as witty and kind of charming in a lot of places until two characters show up later, much later on in the film.
Oh yeah, yeah. They just
I guess at this point it's not really spoilers.
Spider-Man's in it and. You know, Ant-Man's in it. I don't think those are spoilers.
Yeah, and that's exactly the two characters I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I'd totally forgotten that Ant-Man was in the film.
And he's so... Paul Rudd.
It's Paul Rudd, isn't
it? Everyone goes on about, like, don't get me wrong, and Spider-Man's great in it, and of course, you know, it's great to see him in a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue that Paul Rudd steals every scene he's fucking in. Every scene he's in, he's just... That scene when he meets Captain America for first time.
I'm shaking
time.
Your hand for too long.
It's so good. We're inching towards spoilers here. But anyway, the fight scenes are absolutely phenomenal. I think they've done an unbelievable job of including all those characters, giving each character a little bit of time to breathe, but still making this undeniably a Captain America movie. There's no twist about it. It's
absolutely.
A Captain America movie. And do you know what? More than anything else, this film gave me a lot of confidence for Infinity War. It makes, you know, I see this film and suddenly I believe that you can have two films with a bajillion characters and somehow make it work.
Yeah.
Because, of course, that's going to be the big issue with Infinity War, is that you're going to have, like, literally every character, introduced in the Marvel series of films, suddenly all in these two films. And it's going to be an absolute monster to try and organise that.
It is. Like, it's not just the Earth heroes you've got to worry about.
Yeah,
you've also got Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... Not only is it going to be a logistical nightmare, but it's how do you make it work as a film.
Tell you what, think how much in terms of actors' fees they're going to have to pay to make that film.
Not as much as you think. They sign everyone up to huge contracts before
they're
famous. So Chris Pratt's already signed
up
to
that's
a,
who
like
I'm
a
thinking.
Seven
like,
movie
Chris
contract.
Pratt is
Yeah,
is
you'd be expensive if you signed
high.
Up now. But he was signed up when he was a relative unknown.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't get me wrong. Marvel can pay the fucking bills if they need to, because you know everything they do at the moment turns to gold. And this is another great example. You know, Captain America has undoubtedly turned into their best spin-off series. There's no tweets like the first one was good rather than great.
I did not like the first one. I put it up there with the Thor films, where it's just.
Thought Thor was good. I like the Thor. Yeah, I agree with you. I'd put it in the same league as the Thor films, still better than like Iron Man 2. Yeah, Hulk. But Winter Soldier was an absolute revelation.
Yes,
that was
absolutely.
An absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I still think there's an argument to be made that still might not have been surpassed by Civil War. But Civil War is fantastic. The only films which arguably match it are the originals Iron Man and Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3 I thought was spectacular until the final scene where it was all fire dude. I didn't like that. But so much of Iron Man 3 is so good. But, you know, whether Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, obviously I think they've got to do more than one film to be in this conversation.
Guardians is so good.
Oh, it is so good. But of course, I still think, you know, to have that conversation, it's got to be a series of films. You know, the fact is, like, at this point, Captain America has done it over a period of time.
Yeah.
I thought it was up there. I don't think it was quite, I don't think it had the same impact as, say, you know, the original Avengers film.
Yeah.
Which I still think is, you know, close to being
I know what you mean. Like, I think it was the sense of scale that you get when the Avengers... It's like the Avengers take on Manhattan.
Yeah. You've got to
you know,
get
the,
that right.
The airport scene was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. We're talking fine margins here. The fact is, I would have that in the same conversation, and I am you know, I couldn't be a bigger fan of the original Avengers movie. But then equally, I was incredibly disappointed by the follow-up. Like, the follow-up's a good film, but I thought it was so messy, and it finally started falling foul of what we all thought it might. You know, it felt messy. There were too many characters. It felt like it was setting up other movies. Whereas this film, like the original Avengers, seemed to do it all so effortlessly. It was setting up these characters. It was, you know, building on a universe that already exists. It was telling its own story, and it just managed to do all this without you noticing, without seeing the cracks. And I think, you know, come the end of the year, this is going to be in the conversation for the best films of the year. I think
I think so. I mean, certainly as a nerd, it's going to be in that conversation.
I guess
we'll see how Rogue One turns out.
Yeah, because even like people, obviously Spider-Man stands out and a lot, but I thought Black Panther was fucking fantastic.
Very, very cool. Chadwick Boseman is a revelation.
Do you know, I forgot at first that Black Panther was in it because there was so much going on in his introduction. Again, I won't go into spoilers, but he's obviously, you know, the first time we see him, he's not in his getup. I just thought he was just a guy, and I was just like, fucking hell, this guy is oozing charisma. I was like, oh, of course, it's the Black Panther.
As soon as I saw the old guy being referred to as T'Challa, I was like, God, I hope his dad's also called T'Challa, or this is going to be like an old guy in a suit.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he really kind of, you know, works out halfway through the film. There's like a big training montage and gets a gym. But he was again one of the revelations to me, because I know very little about the Black Panther. I'm aware of the character, but I don't know much about the history of the character. But I was like, I'm really on board, and genuinely, it did the job in so much that I'm genuinely looking forward to seeing a standalone Black Panther movie now.
Yeah.
Finally, we're already over an hour. It's 11:30 and I need to go to bed because I'm going to be up at 6 a.m. a quick talk about what we played this week. I just wanted to bring this up because I've given Fallout 4 a proper go.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's out of the blue.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't expect it to be the one that converted you.
It's more of the same. It's a decent enough game, and I get it. It's got this big open world. But the visuals are pretty ropey. The animations
really?
Are garish.
I like it. I think it keeps all the grossness of Fallout, but there's a lot more colour in it.
Yeah, but it's technically so average. Like, when you're in battles and things, like, again, it's the anime. Like, the world's okay until you get up close, and it's just, you know, you're used to a certain level. And that's not, like, if that was the only problem, fair enough, but the animations are rubbish.
Yeah.
The gunplay isn't great.
It's a marked improvement over the third one.
That's the thing. It's everything about it is decent, and the world. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the world's fantastic. Don't get me wrong, but for me to commit, and again, I gave it like 6 hours, and I'm like, I'm not feeling. And I know people say, oh well, you know, it gets good after 20 hours, or you know, it's the kind of game you play for 100 hours. But if I'm going to play a game for 100 hours, I've got to be on board. And as I said, you know, I didn't even keep playing Witcher 3 for that reason. And Fallout...
Another 10 out of 10 for me.
Well, you look at something like Witcher 3. Witcher 3 is this big, huge, massive game, but technically it's fantastic. Whereas Fallout 4, it's like, what's the excuse for this always being so shit?
I can see where you're coming from. But that game started development before they'd finished Skyrim.
That doesn't give it a free goddamn pass, as far as I'm concerned. As I said, I get it why people like it, but it's just not for me. There are a lot of okay things in a gorgeous world, you know. And I get it; people give it a free pass because it does have this big, huge, sprawling world, and there is, you know, this mountain of options and ways to play the game.
Yeah.
But the fundamental is the way I choose to play the game. It's just not that great. But yeah, Fallout 4 not that great. Star Fox Zero, I'm still playing that. I know a lot of people have issues with it, and there are some levels which are a bit slower, but I still fundamentally really enjoy the game. I've gone back to Splatoon again. That game is brilliant. I keep playing Yo-Kai Watch. That game is so weird.
Is that for on the bus?
Yeah, well, no, I've just been playing at home when Bethan's been watching shit like cooking programs on TV.
Oh, right, okay.
But I'm not sure how long I'll keep at it, because I think it will get a bit repetitive. But it's really odd, because the localization has clearly tried to make it more American, and it has this kind of Saturday morning cartoon feel. But it's undeniably Japanese. Like, I can't remember the name of the town. It's called, like, I don't know, Springdale or something like that. It couldn't sound any more American.
Yeah.
But then you see all the houses, and you're like, these are Japanese houses. And then he goes into the park, and there's a Japanese shrine.
A bit like Big Hero 6.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. But it's almost like, It's more that everything's Japanese, but they've just given them American names. But it's a game for kids, but there's something about it I find incredibly charming.
And did you get a chance to play Card Hunter at all? I remember we mentioned it last
episode. No, I still haven't played that.
No.
So it's just because this week I've been reviewing Yo-Kai Watch,
mm-hmm.
and I also reviewed Rugby Challenge 3. That's the other game I was playing on PS4, which is okay. It's pretty decent.
Is it?
I say it's decent.
I would love to have a rugby game that I can play. There hasn't been one I've enjoyed since the PS2.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is one of the better ones.
Really?
And it's fun. I think they've got a good balance between simulation and arcade. Like, mm-hmm. the scrum's relatively straightforward, but I think it works. And again, the more into rugby you are, the more critical you might be. But yeah. I'm just looking for a fun rugby game.
Yeah,
whereas the passing itself is quite simplistic, but you've got to wait for your players to get into the right position, otherwise
the shoulder buttons. It's always the shoulder
buttons. Yeah, so the shoulder buttons are the same here, but if you just go throwing it, it's not like, you know, your passes are laser guided. You've got to wait for players to get in position, or you're going to throw shit pass. You know, you won't get any run from the ball, you won't get over the gain line.
Right, okay.
But it's not perfect. You're still working on a relatively limited budget, and the Wales team isn't there, but it's got loads of the club teams. It's got a lot of the club licenses.
Okay.
And I still think, even though it kind of has that air of looking slightly like a PlayStation 3 game, it does look a bit more polished than
I can accept it not visibly looking as good if the mechanics are solid, because
it's solid.
There hasn't been a rugby game that's been enjoyable since the PS2 era.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely one of the better ones. You know, I don't think anyone's going to remember it in the same way that they remembered, you know, Jonah Lomu Rugby on the PlayStation 1. But, you know, I've had a bit of fun with it. And as I said, as rugby games go, and you've got to judge it based on rugby games, you know, you can't go in expecting, you know, FIFA levels of polish.
Yeah.
It's a decent game. And as I said, it has its problems, but worth a look. The last one, and I think I mentioned it last week just before we go, I went back and started playing Neo again, the demo.
Oh, yeah.
The Team Ninja game. And I just want to bring it up because I've gone through that game now, and that game is special. Really special. And that is a perfect example. And again, we brought this up briefly last week about getting demos right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a perfect example of getting a demo right. Again, maybe, you know, if people had saw, you know, read a description and seeing screenshots, they'd be like, oh, well, it's just Dark Souls with, you know, Japanese, you know, a Japanese flavor to it. And that's generally, yes, that is what it is. It is undeniably very similar to Dark Souls, but more Japanese. But it's such a good game, you know, and I think it's up there with Dark Souls 3. You know, you see a lot of games which are taking the Dark Souls template and trying to replicate it. Like, if you're going to replicate it, you better replicate it well. You know, you've got to at least match the source material. And Neo, based on what I've played, it's in that conversation. It's so addictive. It's really hard, same thing, you know. And again, you know, it's a lot of those similar concepts. But I would strongly suggest, if you have a PlayStation 4, that you download Neo and give it a go. Because, I think that game is going to surprise a lot of people. And again, as I said, you know, if you're going to do a demo, you got to do it right. And they've teamed up, have done it bang on with that. And it's not out for cool. I don't think it's out until September or something. But it's one to look out for anyway.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much everything I've got this week. I assume you have nothing to add?
No.
I hope not. Really. Everything is good. But I'm absolutely knackered. But, you know, as always, guys, thank you so much for listening.
Yes, indeed.
Please do check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, all that jazz. Obviously, have a look at the website, brashgames.co.uk, where we have an absolute mountain of reviews. We're on iTunes, we're on Android, all that jazz.
Please do like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. You know, be nice people.
Leave a nice review if you want.
Yeah,
they're cool.
That would be lovely.
Makes our day when we read a nice review.
Really does. Even leave a meme review. It'd be something for me to read. I can respond and tell you I think you're a dick. But yeah, thank you as always for listening. And until next week, bye.
Bye.